Well, prior to coming to Genome Alberta, I worked for the federal government in a series of positions, starting as a research scientist and working my way through various levels of management, such as director at Charlottetown and Lacombe, and director general of nationally for food safety research.
Well, what did you do in research?
I was stationed at Lethbridge and really enjoyed 10 years of research in bovine genomics and had the opportunity to do large-scale genetic studies at the ranch at Minibarries.
And is that work that we're actually using today?
We did two different types of projects there. One was obviously on breeding and selection for animals to fit certain types of markets, so carcass merit, carcass quality. But the other one was using technology to try to anticipate what the animal might yield at carcass yield. And that was using ultrasound and image analysis software, which we developed and companies have bought and are using that technology today.
What is it that got you interested in genomics?
Well, genomics is really the whole genome. Prior to the development of this technology, genetics was a classical science, and now the whole genome was being looked at and sequenced, and that is really, really interesting because now the guesswork is taken out of it. Here are the gene sequences that actually code for a particular enzyme or protein that is really important in a particular pathway in all living species. And so, I mean, that's just the answer you're looking for.
Well, when you think about science today, there's so much emphasis on life sciences and biotechnology, and that really has changed over the last decade or two, hasn't it?
Yes, and it's really the integration of really these differences, sciences as opposed to genetics versus chemistry versus biology, like these are all now becoming integrated, saying how do they work together in synthetic biology in order to understand the products that are being generated by our own bodies or the interaction of these particular genes and the environment that you live in to code for you and how you live and how you metabolize. And so that's really a new thing. Plus, the other thing is the advent of the rate of computer technology development and the ability to take large volumes of data and integrate that data analysis with the physical or chemical characteristics that you're measuring. So that whole bioinformatics platform that are being developed in conjunction with other lab tests and computers is really what we're moving forward on now.
Well, in a sense, we couldn't even do this without the computer technology that we have today.
Absolutely correct. No. This is these permutations and combinations that we're looking at and trying to decipher here are really huge. In most cases, we're not talking about single gene type implications, but much, much more integrated responses, I guess, from the gene products and the environment that you're living in. It just gets really, really complicated to sort it out.
Well, you're heading up Genome Alberta. Tell me about Genome Alberta. What is it?
Genome Alberta is a not-for-profit organization established in June of 2005, and we were created by the government of Alberta. And the reason for existing is genomics is an important technology for this province. So genomics, nano, and ICT really provide the platform of, let's say, tools, a toolkit for Alberta researchers and the industry to actually move forward in, I'd say, a whole new dimension here. And so genomics then is the data that is generated from doing DNA sequencing of a particular species. So the human genome is completed, and now people are studying the results of that. And so it's a number of series of steps from the species to the genome to the interpretation of that data to the specific implications of individual or a combination of gene sequence data. And our job is to recommend to the province which are the priority areas that would be good for Alberta to invest in. Invest in terms of research that could help with diagnostics in health or many applications, or for the industry, what do they need? What kind of services can genomics tools provide for health industry, agriculture industry, forestry industry, particularly the energy industry? There's lots of applications.
Where does Genome Alberta fit in with, say, Genome Canada or Genome Prairie, the other genome organizations?
Yes, there's 6 genome centers across Canada, and then there's Genome Canada. So we work in partnership with our colleagues across the country, and I would say it's a healthy level of competition between us, but in many cases we are partnering in working towards a common goal. And so there's 6 genome centers plus Genome Canada. We call ourselves the G7 family of genomic centers. And it's a very healthy cooperative arrangement.
Well, tell me a bit about some of the projects that you're involved in right now.
Well, one of the projects that we have started since I took over is a project with BC. Alberta and BC have a project on the mountain pine beetle. So Genome BC and Genome Alberta both entered into phase one of this project together to do the DNA sequencing of the mountain pine beetle and of the blue stain fungus. And so that's a very important project for, I'd say, to BC, Alberta, and eastward, as the beetle moves eastward. And so we are now looking at expanding that project to include partners from Ontario, Quebec, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, and hopefully Atlantic Canada, because this development of this technology is not simply for one insect, but really this investment will pay off in developing the expertise and resources locally to address other important pest species, being it forestry or agriculture.
Well, how exactly is that project set up, and are you at the point where you've found anything out yet?
The project in Alberta is led by Dr. Janice Cook at the University of Alberta, and in BC, Jorn Bergman, and they are co-principal investigators leading the project. That we're collecting the data now. It's very good quality data being generated, but the specific gene sequences that would be important in terms of potential way to intervene to slow down the reproductive rate or migration or something of the beetle, we're not that far into the project. The project's up and running, but it's too early to try to jump to conclusions based on an incomplete database.
What other projects?
Well, we are supporting a number of Alberta researchers through a Genome Canada-led competition. It's the ag bioindustry and agriculturally important plants that are being led for this initiative. And so there's a number that have gone forward. We expect a decision from Genome Canada through their international peer review process in mid-February, I believe. And Genome Canada does have the funds in place for that. And so that would then it's up to us to find the matching funds for the Alberta researchers and the academic community that would pursue these individual objectives. So that's one of the things that I do while I'm in Edmonton, is to try to convince the powers that be that this is an important area for an investment, and these are the potential returns for that kind of investment.
Is it hard to bring them along?
Is it hard to bring the provincial powers along? I think they have now come around to the idea of believing in the technology. It's not a voodoo science. This is real. It has very huge implications. This pace of discovery using genomic tools and the new DNA next-generation sequencers is extremely fast. And you need to get a hold of this and be moving with it as opposed to trying to play catch-up. So I think we've been able to demonstrate to the provincial bureaucrats and ministers that this is an important technology that Alberta needs to be part of, leaders in fact, and not followers. So yes, we're making good progress in that. It's an ongoing challenge.
Well, two researchers that I've spoken to recently, one who was involved in the 1,000 plant initiative, and then another, a doctor at the Toronto Hospital for Sick Children, both of them say that when you look at the amount of money that it costs now to do DNA testing, like the Human Genome Project was in the billions of dollars, and we're at the point now where we can almost get it down to like 1,000. That's just absolutely incredible. What is the change that you've seen cost-wise that allows that to happen?
There is such interest by the companies to develop computer equipment, hardware, and software to try to analyze the data quicker and with more accuracy. And there's a number of competing companies doing that, but because the rewards are really good. I mean, if you can understand what is the cause for one sibling being blind or diseased versus the rest of the family, you know, there's huge interest in that particular topic. So, you know, if you can figure that out, maybe there's an intervention strategy you could develop that, based on their gene pattern that is not coding for a product, that you could give them something that would override that and make them live a much more normal life. So there's many, many applications that would be beneficial to the general public here. Many applications.
Should people be scared?
Scared? I've often heard that. I've gone to quite a few public lectures on this topic and listened to the audience of, you know, what are their concerns. And I think the more people understand what genetics can do for them or what genomic tools can do for them, it's always a case of weighing out the pros and cons. But in this case, I think the list on the pro side really, really outweighs the cons. The cost of doing this is expensive. The expertise is a very high level. The caliber of academics that are involved with this area, I mean, you need to have a terrific amount of training. It's just not off-the-shelf technologies. And you also need to have a specific application in mind. It's not to say that if in the wrong hands of the wrong people, things could not go awry. I'm sure it can. It's the same in any business. But I think the chances of that are quite remote, given that a lot of these investments are public investments, and the public is usually sitting around the table when we make these decisions on what kind of studies to fund and what kind of equipment to purchase.
The most recent announcement I saw you at was the announcement for the launch of the 1,000 Plant Genome Initiative. Tell me about that and tell me why it's significant.
This project is led by Dr. Gain Wong, University of Alberta, and the objectives here are to determine gene sequences of 1,000 plants, mostly medicinal plants, but other plants that could be of benefit to Alberta as well. So again, knowing the data, knowing the DNA sequences of this, then you start to understand why some plants are more drought tolerant or more water efficient, more nutrient efficient, those kind of things. So as climate change, you bring climate change into the equation here, if we are moving to a drier area, then which plants can continue to perform with less moisture? So those that are more drought tolerant, what makes them drought tolerant? Could we see an opportunity to put those same drought tolerant genes in commercially important plants? Medicinally important plants. So it's that kind of thing that this project has lots of those kind of implications. So I think it's a good study. It's been done in cooperation with the Beijing Genomics Institute, and it will involve samples not only from Alberta and from Canada, but plant samples from around the world that academics will get together and say, these are the important plants that we should look at in this particular order.
Well, how long will it take to do that? Because that's a huge number of plants.
It really is. And so getting back to your earlier question about the development and a rapid development of these technologies, these next generation sequencing equipment. This is a 2-year project, and according to Dr. Gain Wong, the capacity in China to do this very quickly exists already, and they've made it a priority area. And there are some other industrial partners in the project as well. But the application, again, is back, what can our academic community then take from these plants and use for benefits to Alberta and to Canada?
One of the other projects that Genome Alberta has been involved in has been the human metabolomics project that David Wishart has headed. Tell me about that, and where is that leading us now?
Well, this is a really exciting project. David Wishart is a real gift to the University of Alberta. He leads a tremendously important area of metabolomics, which is the chemical metabolites that each of us create and secrete in our own body, and it makes us unique. And he would be considered the world's leading expert on this topic. And it has huge implications to human medicine. I mean, the connection here, what goes wrong, what do you produce? David can determine that very, very quickly, and therefore what you're not producing as well, or what you're overproducing. So it's just a really, really important area, and I can't say enough good things about that team. I really want to see that go forward. The implications are much more than just human health. David's interest in agriculture and both plants and animals, and again, what makes those individuals unique. Those characteristics are defined by their chemical makeup, and their chemical makeup is governed by their genetic sequence data. So David is looking at all of that and trying to put it into an interpretable, user-friendly information, say, well, this is the direction this individual is going versus a different one, and has many implications in terms of predictive diagnosis for diseases or potential for a particular disease. So I think Alberta will continue to lead that area. There's a strong investment in that already, and I see that there's a number of companies now very keen to follow up on these kind of results. And that information is being put on the web. But the companies are saying, you know, if you were to develop a service around that, there could be huge returns for that kind of service because, A, he's the leading edge person in terms of generating this kind of data on a numerous species. And so I think companies say this is a potential for them to develop diagnostic services around it.
I think one of those companies is an Edmonton company called Canomics, is that right?
That's correct. That's one that's up and running already. But I hear a number of food companies are saying, oh, well, when our customers eat this, some respond favorably and some don't. We didn't determine that from our earlier taste panel kind of work. So now when we have the facilities such as David Wishart's team offers here, it would be interesting to set up a service lab to kind of look at when they get samples in that for some people are reacting negatively towards a particular food product, what's involved with all that? Why are they so different?
Now, you mentioned earlier that genomics can actually have some impact on energy and new technology around energy. What are some examples?
Well, this is the latest project that we are pushing, and it's become our highest priority. It's in the whole area called metagenomics, which is really environmental genomics. And it involves both energy and environment in this case. And what we're proposing to do here, and I need to preface this by saying when we as the academic community at the various universities or research institutions that do this work. So I'm only the messenger here in most cases. It is my main interest in terms of science as well, but those are the individuals that need to receive the credit. They're the ones that are doing the work, the academics, researchers at the institutions. In energy, you know, what makes oil oil? You know, so it's taken millions of years to become oil. And that process is facilitated and essentially accomplished by the microbial populations that exist in the soil or in the earth. And it is our intent to actually look at those microbial communities to determine which ones are breaking down the organic matter to create the more higher viscosity oils. And therefore, if you knew that information, maybe you could improve the extraction efficiency at existing oil wells or in coal bed methane by knowing what the specific microbial communities were that were actually accomplishing these jobs. So these are naturally occurring populations. And I say community of populations because we don't think it's a single type of bacteria. We think it's a combination of different species and the interaction of their activities that actually breaks the organic matter down to create the oil. And so the oil companies really like this idea because they've already made the investment in the infrastructure, the oil wells that exist to date. But when the cost of extraction gets too great for whatever reason, they still have leases for that particular site. And by seeding naturally occurring specific populations of microorganisms in those oil wells, they probably could help change the viscosity and improve the efficiency of extraction
But you're talking about a natural process that took millions of years. Mm-hmm. Would you be looking at the genetic aspect of it or the genomics to speed up that process? So it's a matter of just a few years rather than millions?
It's still going to be a long-term process, no question about it. But in the past, you would have had competing microbial communities working very slowly over time. If you remove some of that or influence the number of microbial populations of a specific type, you could actually increase the rate of that happening. And I think that's all we're looking at here. It's just, you know, this would be more efficient if you use these communities versus that. But the important thing to remember here, Cheryl, is that the communities vary from location to location. Now, I mean, broad separation in distance is not next door to each other. But that's an important thing to determine and figure out, because you don't want to be seeding them with a population that's not going to help them at all. And so that's why there's reason to pursue looking at a number of different sites and seeing which are the important ones for this particular application.
How far down the road is that to see results?
I think this is one of the ones that's fairly close. This project, if it's supported, which I think it will be, and started in 2009, could see applications and hopefully even positive returns in a decade or two ahead of us. And if you think about it, it's taken millions of years to get there. So this could be one of those much faster return on investment at essentially a minimal cost, because the infrastructure and everything else is already in place. You have the lease for a long time. You're just seeding naturally occurring populations to do their job.
Well, you also said this would have some connection to the environment. So what would be the benefit for the environment?
Equally important is what we're talking about on the energy efficiency side here is what can we do to help clean up the tailing ponds that are associated with much of the energy-derived sector here. And so that's what we're also using microbial populations to look at through the generation of methane here. There are many different types of bacteria involved in these processes, and which ones could actually help us convert that methane into an energy source that maybe could power a reaction that might even help us do something on capturing CO2 on site at the particular location. So there, that's one. And then another side of it is how could we deal with the tailing ponds in terms of a potential for bacteria that break down some of the really nasty chemicals that are generated in these extraction processes to help break them down or render them more neutral so that they don't get into the water system or other aquasystems around the world. But anyway, that's what we're looking at. You know, there is a potential for the bacteria to break or neutralize some of these really, I'd say, the nasty chemicals that end up in the environment.
Well, is this what you would call the new green technology?
Yes. I mean, these are naturally occurring populations. And so whether it's for improving extraction efficiency or trying to tie up some of the concentrations of serious metals that could be in the water here, or even the CO2 capture, the sequestration of that could easily be facilitated through bacterial populations. But you need to know what they are, which ones are useful and which aren't. And I guess that's what I think Alberta has a chance to look at. And, you know, we're talking energy and environment here, but there's an equally important relationship when you talk about microbial populations to not just human microflora, but the animals. And one of the biggest ones, which agriculture is important to this province, is for cattle. Cattle are ruminants, and their digestive system is composed of millions of microbes that exist there in different populations. And how can take that information to see how can they be more efficient with material that they're grazing or consuming. If you look at a musk oxen or a moose, which exists on what we think would low nutrient minerals and fiber and some nutrients material, and yet they seem to do well when they have access to that, then maybe we should know what those bacterial populations are, and maybe it would be helpful to put them into normal cattle populations so that they could be more efficient at eating and grazing and converting nutrients from one type of biomass into protein and muscle for our own livestock production.
Now, you have a whole list of projects that are on the go or things that you want to get going. What do you see as being the big picture then, especially when you look at Edmonton? Is Edmonton really a contender on the global scene as far as genomic research goes?
Well, to answer that question, you have to look at, you know, who are the players here and the infrastructure and resources that are available. So University of Alberta is a major university. They have a strong history of academic success in this area, in the genetics area, and they have a strong desire to focus on this particular theme area. So there's a lot of effort through CFI and other applications to obtain funds and equipment for the genomics area. And they have a university president and a vice president of research that are both huge ambassadors for them on genomics. Both of them are very, very familiar with this topic, having worked in the area themselves and promoted it. So, yes, I mean, it takes a whole combination of natural advantages, resources, academic excellence that exists, and a willingness to pursue that. And I'd say Edmonton has that with the people that they have at the University of Alberta. And the government of Alberta has recognized that this is an area that they want to spend money on. They think it is part of their future. It can hopefully help the citizens of Alberta in the near future, and certainly will in the long-term future.
As head of Genome Alberta, what are your personal goals in terms of advancing the work that your group does?
Well, my personal goals are to try to develop more appreciation for what these tools can do, both industry and for societal benefits. I think we don't have to do all of the work here, but what can we glean from the efforts that are being done around the world and bring those technologies or services to Alberta? But when we can't find those particular applications that exist today, but they need still to be done, then what does Alberta need to do to invest in that, to take it to the forefront of that particular technology and the application, and ultimately service or benefit to society? And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to identify those opportunities that don't exist anywhere in the world, and bring that expertise here, or train those kind of people here for an application that we see is big, usually bigger than just for us. Our problems are not normally unique. Problems in health go across many borders, and we would say if we could develop the technology and services here, then the application could be quite widespread, and that would be a good return on investment.
Thank you very much, David.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you.